This is for the nerds, this is for the brainiacs, this is what we deserve. Go ahead and play it back, you ain't gonna touch me, you not gonna do nothing, you are not above me, I bet you wish you was me, I know that I know.
What is poppin', everybody? And welcome back to another special episode of the Only Friends Podcast. Well, you know, it's me and my only friends, which includes, but is not limited to, a special guest in the building today, straight from Blackfoot, Alabama. It's Blackfoot, the Malaysian ankle biter. What's poppin', Andre?
Hi, everyone.
How you doing, buddy? It's been so long since you've been here.
Look at it. Great to see you. Black.
They are. Those aren't even socks. Those are just your feet.
No, those are just my feet. it's been good, man. I mean, there's only so many ankles you can bite before you get tired of it.
It's true.
Just out there biting all the ankles.
Mm-hmm.
I have been. I definitely have been. All the different kinds, the black kind, the purple kind, brown kind.
What's your favorite?
My favorite is the brown kind.
Oh, okay.
That's why me and Guapo get along.
Understandable. Very cool.
Yeah. So he's actually a brown belt.
Podcast just took a very racist turn.
He's actually a brown belt in karate.
Oh. News to me, but okay.
We got the baby back on the podcast. Most importantly, she was getting trained for a little while.
Aww. Yeah, you're undermining all the training.
But she's back.
The first thing he said to me is, don't let her come in contact with anyone else for a few weeks until you solidify the training.
A few weeks? Good luck in that household.
Yeah, no shit.
We love the baby.
Here we are.
Did you tell your roommates to not be in contact with
No.
the... You know how hard that would be? Get a puppy in the house, be like...
You know how easy it is? None of them leave their room.
He also didn't
The only difficulty is Conrad. He's just bored all the time.
Like I said, he also didn't even mention that to us.
I literally said something 20 minutes ago, and then she pissed on you.
You said nothing of that.
And he went
effect.
From, oh, the baby did. No. Why do you think I let you outside?
She drank a bunch of water, so I brought her outside, and then she decided to turn around, come back inside, and she pissed right in front of me.
I feel like she's about doubled in size since we've last seen her.
She's gotten a lot taller, for sure. She's obviously put on weight, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you know the difference in weight?
I took her to the vet right before we left to get her a booster. She was 14 pounds. I take her again
she's
next
gotta
Friday,
be about
I think.
18 or 19 now, huh?
I don't know. I'm not sure. What do you think, Pip? How tall? How much you weigh? Oh, okay. Good night. Okay, good night, Miss Pip.
Right to her bed.
She's loving life. She's happy that we're back.
Yeah.
So we got a lot to catch up on. Mm-hmm. We missed our last two shows in, do we call it the Bahamas? Is that how that works?
Bermini?
Bimini.
Bimini.
Bermini?
How am I the one who gets accused of saying words wrong?
Yeah. Bimini.
Yeah. Bimini. I mean, like.
You say it with confidence. I say it with laughter.
Sure. Sure.
Well, that was the last day for sure.
Yeah, we were just like floating around. I guess we ended up in the Keys on Thursday due to a medical evacuation.
Right, yeah. Somebody had a medical emergency on the
ship. I heard it was a
ship.
Young 30-something woman had a stroke.
Really?
I don't know how accurate that report is.
Yeah, I didn't really hear exactly what happened, but hopefully that person is doing okay. They had to make a quick stop at the Keys, which is convenient because it was on the way. So like we were going around, once we left Grand Cayman, we went around Cuba on the west side and then heading towards Bahamas. So the Keys were like right there. So I was able to get there quick, drop that person off, and then head to Bimini.
Bermini.
What did you think about, that was your second cruise, right? First cruise.
My first, yeah.
Was it your first, all your first?
No, that was my, second. Probably second or third.
Second for you too, Guap? How long were your other cruises?
3 days. It was a Carnival cruise line and nothing comparable.
Yeah, same. Do you think 7 days is too long?
No.
I had a blast, dude.
Honestly, I could go for longer. I think 10 days would be the number that I would like.
It went quick, and I was never like, oh, I'm ready to get off the ship.
That's the same way I felt.
Never had that feeling.
There wasn't a moment where I was like, I can go home right now. The only reason why I wanted to go home is I was like, I want to play with Pip.
Yeah. No, besides missing Michelle and the dogs, like, it was amazing. Hmm. I didn't want to leave.
Was it because of the poker, or was it other stuff?
It was everything, really. The food was excellent. It was like, there was always something to do. There was poker. There was, you know, other stuff, as you'll see later on in the Who's Cooking segment. I had a blast.
Yeah, I mean, everything was fun. Everything was very convenient. You know, it's comfortable. So, like, it was just a great time. And I definitely could have stayed on the ship for a few more days, you know?
I was ready to give in to the intrusive thoughts around day four.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, the jumping scene.
Oh, well, it was appealing. A timeout. Let's explain the first 2 days, and then let's get told about day three and four. Then we'll get to understand the reason why.
Day three was great. I won 50K day three.
Okay, mm-hmm. Then let's go on to day four, my friend.
Day four was bad. I lost 200. Day five, I lost 200. Day six, I lost 125. And I had a miserable fucking trip.
You did have a miserable trip. You had bad.
No, the experience itself was great. And even having the availability to a high stakes game on the boat was also great. And this has nothing to do with WPT or the cruise itself. What I made the mistake of was taking on too much responsibility over what was supposed to be a 7-day workcation, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I spent 6 minutes in my room the entire trip, and it was for a nap. Like, just almost never had any downtime whatsoever. The difficulty about scheduling like high stake games on cruise lines like this or anywhere that isn't accessible once you deport,
mm-hmm.
You run out of people so quickly.
Yeah.
Because people want to fucking do stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted to do stuff, but because I'm the pro in the game, I'm expected to be there and start all the games. And, you know, if it's shorthanded, I'm expected to stay. So, like, the last 3 days, the games were very mid by comparison. The stakes were three times what they were in the early days.
Of course.
And I had no way out while there's just a fucking banger party going on the mm-hmm. roof.
It was crazy because out of the 7 days, outside of the three podcasts that we did, I feel like I didn't see you at all. Yeah. I was like, where's Berkey been? I mean, I know you were playing a ton.
It was, I barely slept. I would play till 3 a.m. We'd start prepping for the pod at around 9 or 10,
mm-hmm.
so I would steal like 5 hours of sleep somewhere in between, do the pod, which always would take an hour longer than it should just because prep, and
it's hard, you know, when you're on the road.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard in general, even here. Like, today we started super late just because getting recalibrated takes some time, but it would always take a lot longer. There's always,
you were
hiccups.
Dealing with that.
You think he won that night?
I think so.
You think he booked a win?
I think so.
Yeah.
I was surprised how good his voice was.
I was surprised they didn't zoom in.
He had been singing all fucking night because he couldn't lose.
I was surprised they didn't zoom in on Berkey's fucking tilted face.
I was gone. I was the first person out of that room. I won't give Rob the satisfaction. This fucking guy lives to troll me. So good. He's turned into such a goddamn nit. All of the Rob Young hype is out the window. This guy plays so fucking tight now. It's unbelievable. He just wants to keep raising the stakes so that he can not have to ever 3-bet.
Mm.
Like, once we get to 1K, 2K, he just never has to 3-bet, and it's okay because, you know, everybody's 30 big blinds deep. But yeah, I mean, my routine was, honestly, I enjoy a routine too, and I liked what was accessible. Like, I wasn't out of my comfort zone at all. I got to do my usual morning routine, like hit the spa, went to the sauna, the gym.
Yeah.
Everything was fantastic. It was just, it felt like such long days to me because we'd do the pod, it would end at like 1 or 2. I would go eat, spa, sauna, gym, and then play at 6. And if, like, I'm lucky, I'm able to get a nap at like 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like, it's really great, but that was not what I was expecting to do. Like, I was expecting to get a tan, mm-hmm. and, you know, work on a couple of business plans that I've been putting on the back burner.
Yeah.
But now here we are.
I didn't play much poker. I played two tournaments. I played the Prime, and then I played like one of the nightly turbos, and then like two small short cash sessions. There was just like always something to do, or I also, didn't, I wasn't up all night, kind of like you were. I think that's why.
Well, you drank yourself to sleep.
No, that was only the last night.
Only one night. The man wasn't drunk at all the whole trip.
The whole trip, I had like a couple drinks.
I gotta tell you, that's pretty remarkable because I had a fully stocked bar in my suite.
No, you didn't. I took it.
That was free.
I only took
three people came to my room. Landon, or sorry, Leon, LaManna, and Conrad.
I took four beers and I took the half bottle of wine. So that's, you know.
Oh, you went real light.
I didn't take any of the hard liquor.
Yeah, don't worry. I took the bottle of tequila. I took the bottle of wine. I took the bottle of gin and a couple of soda waters just in case.
There were more than one bottle of tequila and vodka.
I don't do vodka.
No, don't worry. Leon had it covered.
Yeah, it's fine.
But yeah, like if I was like playing all night, then like if I would have stayed up, like, but it was like 11 or 12 and I'm like, I'm ready for bed.
Yeah.
Man, I'm tired. I'm ready for bed. Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I started thinking, I was like, man, I feel like I did a lot of walking. So I went to go look at my phone and see how many steps I took per day. I averaged 18,300 steps on this cruise per day.
My phone yesterday sent me an alert that said, your activity has been up over the past week. And I was like, wow. I was like, I actually didn't work out as much as I usually do, but I guess I don't have my phone on.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah. I'm just on a boat walking back and forth, back and forth. And the funny
tons
part
of walking,
is,
yeah, a whole up bunch down of the people, stairs and
a whole bunch of people are like, why do I always see you? And like, well, now you know, because I took 18,300 steps per day.
That's a lot.
It really had a feel similar to like the first week of college when everybody's back and there's like a lot of planned activities on campus to get everybody like recalibrated to the college experience and kind of reintegrated with one another. You know, a lot of social, you meet the new people, all that fun stuff. And it did feel like college again to me because during that time frame, I was just fucking practicing. Like we would just, coaches would like intentionally schedule practice during these events so that you weren't fucking off. And that really did kind of ring a bell to me. The one opportunity I had to go out was the night of the Red Party, which seemed like a fucking blast. Honestly, they really did things right as far as like social events go.
Yeah.
Best I could tell. They knew their audience and the fact that everybody's like relatively, I don't want to say like they know each other super well, but like, you know, we're all part of the same community. We run into each other at stops and shit like that. They did a great job of organizing the nightlife activities. So the night of the Red Party, it was just like a red themed party, which for what it's worth, I'm not as olive as I think I am. The red undertones. we don't wear red, okay? Like, whether I'm olive or not, my red undertones definitely are very bad. So I packed zero red. But I was fucking seeing red by the time the party kicked off. So I probably could have passed as a fucking tomato. I was playing a three-handed game waiting for people to show up and just trying to keep it alive. And about an hour and a half, 2 hours in, we're playing, I think we were playing 3-6, but we may have been playing 500 1K. I can't remember. But anyway, about an hour and a half, 2 hours in, I'm stuck like, actually, that's not true. About an hour in, Curtis Meek shows up and I'm down like 20K. And he kind of like casually suggests playing PLO. And I'm just like, okay, like whatever. I'm not down that much. We're four-handed. Other people are going to come. No big deal. I'll just play a couple orbits. So we play PLO. I get cooled off and get stacked by JRB on a King 7-3 two heart board where I have Ace King 10-7 two hearts.
Oh.
And he just turns the three and turns me dead.
Yeah.
So I lose like 40K in PLO. Curtis hit and runs after doubling through and we go back to hold him. So now I'm stuck at like 65K and it's like, all right, no big deal. We're just going to play until people come. This is fine. 100 big blinds, not that much. So I just like suffer every fucking pot. Like I just have second best. I'm getting cooled off, like flush over flush, like dumb shit. Now I'm stuck 200 and Curtis comes back. And without any like question, there wasn't ever a poll or like taking a temperature of the room or anything along those lines. It was just instantly, okay, we're going to play PLO now. And I just lost it. Like I think mentally I was kind of looking for a reason because it's like I'm fucking miserable. I'm getting whacked in this three-handed game where it's like I feel like I have a win rate, but maybe I don't. And the second that it switches to PLO, which for what it's worth, Curtis doesn't give a shit. Like, he just wants to gamble. He'll play whatever. We could have said fucking P-Knuckle, and he would have been like, all right, I'm in. So the second that it switched, when I'm the biggest loser, I was just like, I'm leaving. And I just like stood up and left. And I was so fucking hot that I just went right to the gym. It's like 11 p.m. Yep. The entire cruise ship is partying on the top deck. I'm in there with like €3. Just fucking banging it out. Just hating myself, hating life, throwing weights around as far as the eye can see. And then I get a text. I've literally been in there for 20 minutes. I get a text from JRB that says, Curtis said we can switch back to Hold'em if you come back. And I'm just like, more pissed.
So all I want is like the sound clip of that 20 minutes in between of after you stormed out of the room, because I know you're fucking dying.
I went straight to the gym.
I know everybody in that room was dying, because I have a feeling the way you stormed out.
I just stood up and I said, I don't even remember what I said. I said I'm going. I don't know. Because I didn't want to make a scene in front of Curtis, but it was just like, this is not okay. Yeah. Like, this is just never okay to switch the game up for the person who's getting absolutely smashed in a spot where he doesn't play that game. So I'm like in the gym, and I swear, man, if nobody was there, it would have just been an hour of me screaming just been like at the top of my lungs. So I run into Uncle Tom. I go grab food afterwards, and I run into Uncle Tom, and he's just dead behind the eyes at this point. He's like, where are you going? You coming to the bar? And then I run into Platt, and he's just like giddy on top of the world in a fucking pink suit. I'm like, one, that's not red. Two, how the fuck did this make it onto the ship? He was just very proud of himself, talking about his garment bag and how this is a derivative thereof red. And I'm trying to explain that my dark plum shirt could also pass for red if his magenta suit is going to count. I was so tilted. Still didn't go to bed till fucking 4 a.m. that night.
You went back?
No. I would have needed, I don't get mad very often. I definitely don't tilt all that often. But again, I've been playing well within my bankroll for the last 4 years or whatever, right? But I took way too much of myself for a game that was going to play 501k. I thought we were playing 2-4. So I took like almost all of myself. And I'm winning 250 after the first 3 days. So I just continued to take basically all of myself. Now we're playing 501k the last 3 days. And it's like, well, shouldn't have almost all of myself in 501k. So the stakes were high enough that I knew it wasn't a good idea to go back whenever I'm like, I was genuinely emotional. Like, I was very mad. And not because I was losing, but because of the
switch of the game.
If the game hadn't switched, I would have just been fine. I wasn't angry that I was down 200. I was annoyed, but like, you know, it happens. It's 200 big blinds in a three-handed match. Like, that shit happens all the time.
Yeah. Those texts were fucking great to read.
Man, it was so steaming. I had to be fucking beat red.
Yeah, it's so funny because, like, you know, all right, somebody's down like fucking 400k in the last 2 days, and like, you don't want to laugh, but you know how mad he is in the moment, and it is kind of funny because like, that's fucked up, and yeah, you know, he's just pissed, whatever. So you just like throw the laughing emoji and you just like watch his pain. He's like just ready to kill somebody.
It's like, I can't even explain how much like it's just like a joke of a sim, right? Like, there are powers that be that are just conspiring against and laughing against. Like, the last night there, we're playing five-handed most of the night, and Rob's needling me specifically as much as he humanly can, but he's going on and on and on about how me and Brown Balla and everybody else, like, we never bluff. Meanwhile, like, that was the only way I was making money. Just absolutely full of shit the entire week. And we kind of just are like, okay, you know, whatever, like, show you a bluff if you really want us to, kind of thing. But we started at 2-4 for the first hour. And he just torches off like 150K doing shit that he hadn't done all week. Like, he's just going ape. He got it in like actually, it was probably fine, but whatever. Like, he's squeezing pre and he's like blasting off posts. It's like, oh man, this is the Rob that I remember and I know and love. So of course, like, as he's needling us, he's also kind of like, let's up the stakes type of thing, right? And the average stack in the game, like, he's sitting with like 300 or 400, I'm sitting with like 200 or 300, and then everybody else has like 50k. So he finally gets it up to like 501k. And now he's just like, oh, game's not so easy when the stakes are high, is it, boys? And I'm thinking like, well, yeah, fucking everybody has 50 fucking big blinds, right. You know? So I raised like the first five hands of 501k, and I just happened to have it. Like, well, what I consider to be it. Like, yeah. You know, I have like ace jack suited. I have kings twice.
Hands that open.
Yeah, I have kings twice. I have aces. That's none of them can win. Because now that we're playing 501k and everybody's relatively shallow, there's no maneuverability. So everyone just calls.
Yeah.
It's just call. There's no option on the table other than call.
Yeah.
So Rob's next act after I open, he calls me 100% of the time.
And then it looks like a South Point 1-2 table.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome to my world, Burke.
I might retract my statement that I can beat fucking low stakes.
Yeah.
Because
what it's like.
Because this experience was enough to make me realize that I don't have the discipline to do what's necessary to fucking win.
This is exactly what happened.
And this exact hand that I played is a clear depiction of it. I opened black kings. We're playing five-handed, so I opened it from the cutoff.
Yep.
Rob calls the button. I open from the hijack. Rob calls the cutoff, button calls, small blind calls, big blind calls.
Yep.
7-5 deuce, all clubs.
Who led into you?
No one. Checks to me. I bet 20%. Rob calls, brown baller calls out of the big blind.
Okay.
Turn, king of diamonds.
Good card.
Brown baller checks, I check. Rob, pot. Now, mind you, I know that my hand is just supposed to bet three times. I have the effect of nuts.
Right.
But my immediate thought process is, if I bet the turn, one of two things is going to happen. Either these two don't have hands to call any longer because the king is very, very bad. Or I get action that I don't want because one of these motherfuckers flopped a flush.
Yeah.
So I understand now that even though I'm near top of range, based off of how multi-way works, et cetera, I got to slow down a little bit. So I check. Rob, pot and a quarter.
Yeah.
I wanted the fold right there. Swear to God. If I just had like naked kings with the king of clubs, I probably would have just folded right there.
All right. Let's go to the wizard, Guapo Theory. Guapo, what do you got for us?
It's a big fat no.
So brown baller folds, and this will be a great indication as to how badly I wanted to fold my hand. Brown baller folds a 9-high flush.
What?
Yeah. I call, obviously. River, offsuit 8 of diamonds. Check, Rob, all in, pot and a quarter. Pot and a half, something like that. I'm losing 400 straight. I'm not about to fold top set, but I 100% know that I am never winning in this spot. Never.
You didn't just pay.
No, I paid.
Right,
wow, this really was a South Point, Jewel of the South.
It is the South.
Like, hand.
When people don't three bet, it's all
paid,
the same.
I paid and I berated him.
Yeah.
What did he have?
Queen 4 of clubs.
Yep.
He goes, really unlucky, mate. And I go, you just fucking raised the stakes so you can call literally any two and fuck me. You're just trying to play bingo. You have no interest in playing poker. You have no interest in trying to bluff me. You just want to fuck me.
And you know what he sounds like? He sounds like a shit rag.
Yeah, 100%.
Exactly. Right. 100%. This is what happens. See?
No, I snapped.
It's just bingo.
A lot of people kept calling me
an ankle biter, and he's not wrong.
Wow. A lot of people asked me what Mizrag was.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely what you just 100%. Saw.
This would be Berkey 3 days into that challenge, playing 1-2.
Oh, down
at the Jewel wherever you're going to do it.
Here's the thing. Like, This is never a bad thing. Like, everything that was happening is never a bad thing. It was bad for two reasons. One, I'm playing well above my comfort level when it comes to money. And two, I don't play these types of games very often.
Sure.
Yo, Sid just said you better keep your ass at the Bellagio because you don't want no problems, man. He said you will break.
I wouldn't, because I would spend a lot of time like recalibrating what to do, or like the things that make you money.
Right. Yeah.
And also, like, at the South Point, I would just never stop betting here because I would also have like a ton of bluffs. But mm-hmm. when you're playing in a game where the money matters way too fucking much to you, you can't take all these polar lines.
Well, I mean, if you 100x crossbook or 1000x crossbook, it will mean a lot to you.
Well, that doesn't matter.
Is
the,
it,
the money still means a lot to
on the cruise, is it harder to reload because...
No, everything's crypto.
Okay, everything's...
I mean, yes, for the public games. No, for the private games.
Okay. Well, I mean, everybody could have just used their credit card, so...
Yeah.
It wasn't that hard. Okay. Yeah, there was some kid hustling.
Well, sort of. I mean, if you're playing small.
Yeah, I mean, there weren't really...
You can only get 3K.
Was it 3K a day?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, brutal.
Okay.
Because I was wondering if that had something to do with it where, you know, I would assume people play tighter if they can't reload as easy.
No, it's no, yeah. Everybody was very good when it came to posting with money, all that fun stuff. Honestly, it's just like one of those things where the stakes just got, it was clear that the stakes got uncomfortable for just about everybody, except Rob, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it just really changes the dynamic of the game. Like day one through three, we're playing poker. And you're getting a ton of loose action from guys where these stakes may be a little bit small. But the reason why the stakes are a little bit small is because they have enough depth to fuck around. Mm. Whenever you move it up, like nobody bought in deeper. You know, we started playing 501K. It's not like people started buying it for 250K.
Your strength gets neutralized, obviously, when, you know.
Yeah, for sure. But it's not even just that. Like, if it were just about that, then I have no gripe because they certainly shouldn't cater the game to me.
No,
right, for sure.
It's more so that it... I don't see how it could possibly be fun for anybody.
Phil Hellmuth.
Yeah, he'd have a blast.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's essentially what the game turns into.
Yeah.
Everybody's super shallow, and like you just reach the polarized range very fast. I mean, the amount of times that I saw like top pair fold to a second bet, like quarter pot, three quarters pot, and they're just like, nope.
Ishan folded a fucking flush to one bet.
Yeah, I mean, I could be a little bit off in that he might have folded pre, but I'm pretty positive he didn't, because who folds a suited hand after four callers?
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure he just check folded turn, which is kind of sharp.
Check folded turn.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he bet flop pot and half.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
How are you on a podcast? It's just like...
I misread it. Misheard it. I misheard it.
Burke, how'd your diet do on the...
Crushed it.
Really?
Lost 5.5 pounds.
I was going to say, because there were like, you were on tilt and there was plenty of places to eat your fillings.
I didn't have any sweets. I had pretty much eggs or meat with every meal. The meat on a stick, what a fucking dream.
It was great, right?
It was so good.
At the dock?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you good. Just, there's a Mediterranean place. Mm-hmm. They just, you ask for chicken and steak. They give you skirt steak on a stick, and then they give you chicken thighs on a stick.
Yeah. So you nice. Get you get New York strip delivered to your room from the steakhouse. The strip.
It wasn't great.
It wasn't.
The steakhouse was pretty mid.
Whoa.
I disagree, man. I think
it was pretty good.
The steakhouse was so good, but it was so good in a way where you don't like it's not your thing.
Tammy and Leon agreed with me.
They told me they loved it.
The tomahawk was one of the worst tomahawks I've ever had.
Oh, really?
For sure.
I like this.
And then you had to pay up for that.
Yeah.
I like the steak. I didn't really think it was the best or the worst, but it was cool. Whatever.
Yeah,
all the food was decent, I will say.
Mm-hmm. The Italian place was really good. The sea bass was good.
Mexican place we went to was good, too.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have agave, that was good. Somehow I didn't
I only
find
went to one dinner.
There.
That was the steakhouse?
That was the only place I went
to. Yeah.
That's the only place I went to really eat as well, because I don't know what the fuck I was doing between 6 and 9.
Spent a lot of time at the food court.
So did anybody actually gain weight from this?
Yes, I had to.
I probably gained a little bit, but not a ton. I actually ate pretty good too. I ate eggs a lot, and like, you know, the meals were probably more calorie dense than I'm used to, so probably gained some, but I wasn't eating a lot of sweets either.
I saw a lot of YouTube chat swooning over you, Brian.
Oh yeah?
A lot of them.
Oh yeah. They're real impressed with the tortoise's gains.
You know, I'm trying. I'm out here. We in the streets.
They don't know about Tut, though.
They don't know about Tut.
They don't know about Tut.
They don't know about Tut, but they're about to find out.
Turned up tortoise.
Uh-huh. You know, he's one of those people that was just out there cooking.
Ready or not, here I come. Jumped out with my soul leaking. Going hard till I'm so eating. No chatting and no speaking. No dapping with slow breathing. Damn, homie, you the man, homie. They can't do it, but you can, homie. They can't do it, but you can.
All right, so we have a long list of people that were cooking this week. We're going to start off with Casey Mills, getting seventh in the 5K. 5K main out on the WPT Voyage for 42K. But not only was she cooking, her son bought 1% of her.
That's amazing.
Sharp.
So he's also cooking. Shout out to Rhett. Next up, we got our homegrown MTT's finest, Guapo.
Let's go, Guapo.
What's popping, Guapo? Gets into the prime, the 1100. What'd you get, like 30-something for 6,400, I believe?
$6,400, man.
Nice, nice, nice. Love
to
see it.
Senor Berkey for the investment.
Anytime. It's cold hard cash.
Mm-hmm.
Love to see it. Caitlin Kameski.
She's really cooking.
Wins the ladies event for 10K. And
WPT champion.
Just getting it popping out there. She said she was going to win it. She said she was pretty drunk.
Mm-hmm. That's so great. That's the best way to do it.
It's actually really funny.
Maybe I should have played a tournament.
We got Rob Kuhn 15 days into a fast. Is he going to do it? What does he have, like another 15 more to go?
He's halfway through.
He's halfway through, I believe.
That's...
And be quite honest with you.
He'd have never survived the cruise.
No. Well, I mean, no. Wait, what do you mean? He's out there with Sean Deeb right now in Costa Rica, and Sean's just eating food in front of him all day.
Oh, my God.
Ordering cakes to the room and shit.
Just taunting him?
Apparently, Sean's kids are also taunting him.
Oh, my God. Jeez. He's got the whole crew.
And last but not least.
Yeah.
Turned Up Tortoise is in the building.
Now I'm here.
He was cooking.
What'd you do?
Yeah, 7 days.
I was. What do you think I did? Of course, I watched the sunset. Not only did I watch the sunset, I filmed sunset and I sent it to Michelle. And then
that's a good man.
Yeah, and then I put on a Disney Plus and got the Taylor Swift Eras Tour. I was singing. Dancing in my room by myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As one does.
I took a shower. Now I'm here.
Perfect.
Amazing.
You're amazing.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here.
But that's turned into the Turned Up Tortoise. We call him Tut around here from now on.
I love that you guys got to experience this. You guys got like 2008 LaManna for a couple days.
Listen, I had to get a little wild the last night. I was kind of reserved for most of it, and I just said, you know what? It got me on the beach. I'm day drinking. The sun's beating down on me. And yeah, we turn up.
That video was exactly why we didn't have a podcast on Friday. We were docked at Bimini and I woke up and I saw this beautiful Bohemian beach. And I just thought to myself, Tortoise don't want to work today.
I didn't.
Tortoise want to get lit.
Oh, I worked. I was working it. You didn't see me working it.
I showed up to the beach at like, I don't know, 3 p.m. And LaManna was already fucking lights out. That video was probably taken around midnight.
Oh, that was late. Yeah.
Tortoise got stamina.
I was so surprised to walk in there and see him. I was like, what in the fuck is going on? And then, like, the second I saw him, I knew he was gone. I knew everything was gone. It was just
Conrad sent that to one of our group chats. And, and Toby Lewis, final tableist of the main event this year, Toby Lewis says, cruises are weird.
What did Michelle say?
Michelle said,
she's used to that.
She said
Let's
something like,
real.
I'm scared.
Oh,
or,
yeah.
Yeah, I think she said, I'm very scared.
She opened it.
I took Brian to a Korean karaoke session. You were there, right, Kwan?
Yeah, I was there.
This man, first off, he can sing a mean tune of Taylor, Taylor Swift song.
I did. So there was also karaoke on the ship. And that night, somehow there's not
well,
video
what's
of it.
Amazing
probably
is
somewhere. I did a little like, little Taylor.
Like Landon
a,
probably has
like
it.
A 13-year-old girl. You did like the entire dance with it too.
Yeah. Well, it's either you go all the way or you don't go at all. You know what I mean?
That sounds like a Taylor Swift song.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's weird. I feel like alcohol for you is not a downer. It's an upper. Like you
could, yeah. You know, well, like until everything. It's not. But until, yeah. Well, the next day, I felt pretty down.
Down bad.
I was down bad, bro.
Oh, I was like, why did I pick the last day to just get blacked out when now I have to like travel all day long?
It was brutal. Nothing. But got it popping.
I bet felt nice once I finally made it back to Vegas.
Yeah, I will say.
But you know, it was fun. You know, I had a good time.
I had a blast. I want to say it was one of the best experiences I've ever had. I can't wait till next life. Year.
Definitely
and,
going back.
And I can't wait till next year.
Bringing Michelle this time for sure.
Yep.
It's gonna be a lot of fun. I'll probably play less poker next year.
Yeah, that is probably true for me too.
Did you include Rob Kuhn in the Who's Cooking?
I did. Yeah.
Okay, I must have missed that. Sorry.
How do you fucking have a podcast? Okay. You don't pay attention to anything. How the fuck do you have a podcast? This is ridiculous. You know, honestly, one day you'll just get fucking head out your ass, and you know, maybe you'll be good on a podcast. Till then, what's next, Burke?
That's quite different than eliminating an entire street from a hand history.
You eliminated an entire man from a segment.
Well, that's true. And he's not small.
To be fair, in his defense, he's partially eliminating himself.
He is. He's half the man he used to be.
He's halfway through, right?
He is halfway through, and he said that like he feels no urge to eat, which I just that's find so this to be fucking remarkable.
Well, didn't you say it gets hard at first, then it starts to get easier?
For me, it was like that. Sorry. For me, it was the inverse.
How long was your fast though?
I did 5 days.
Wow, really?
And it was very easy out of the gate. I would say like the first 72 hours were quite easy, and they got very difficult. And I suspected that it would be the opposite for Rob. I thought it would be very challenging out of the gate, and then get easier. But I also don't think like anybody makes it 30 days.
Wait, yeah. So I know our neighbor just did this 30 days.
Okay.
My question is, and our neighbor's huge. He's a big guy. He's like 5'6", 6'6", maybe. Yeah. I don't know how big he is, but he's big. Do you think it's because they have more fat? Yes. They're able
yeah,
to?
Yeah, of course. It's a huge advantage. For sure. Okay. It's massive, which is you know why my limitation was maybe like 5 days before I really started to suffer hunger pangs and need to give in. But point is, like, I don't care how big you are, man. 30 days is a long fucking time without food.
I didn't eat breakfast this morning. I'm starving.
They say that it takes 30 days to develop a habit, right? Like, yeah. Imagine your new habit is just like
not eating.
Yeah.
Which, for what it's worth, I could get behind this. Like, can we get the fucking pill? Can you just give me my nutrition in pill form every morning? Like, let's cut to the chase. I don't need to waste 2 hours a day fucking eating and another 4 hours a day digesting, feeling a little like I need a nap, you know? No. Just what do I need? 200 grams of protein, boom, pill, done.
That would be nice. It would be nice to have both options, you know, when you want to sit down and have an awesome meal or well, taste right. really good. Or
how if you're far in a hurry, are we away from that? Pill.
Probably not that far, but I imagine there's a lot of like recalibrating the human body. You know, there's an attachment between your taste buds and your brain and like the feeling of being satiated and like chewing and all of this stuff that when you remove it, I imagine that the cravings don't just disappear
right.
despite the fact that you're nourished.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I know there's a big difference between me eating 40 grams of protein versus drinking a shake.
Yeah.
It's just very different in mm-hmm. the way that it affects me. Like the shake affects me in a much more positive way in the sense that like I don't feel groggy. I don't feel like I get bogged down by digestion.
But you chug the shake in like 15 seconds and then you're just like, I'm still hungry.
Yeah. And even if I'm not still hungry in that moment, very quickly thereafter, I feel a desire. Like I want popcorn. I just want something to mm-hmm. chew.
Well, that's what they say. They say you should eat slower. Like if you eat slower, then you'll eat less. Right, because if like you eat really quick, then you're like your body doesn't have enough time to realize that it's already full, and then you want to just keep eating. But if you eat slowly, then
I'm sure there's something to that. Like I don't know.
That's kind of along the lines of what you're saying.
I would imagine it's more of an argument for salad.
You don't make friends with salad.
Like here, chew this empty calorie foliage. Is it foliage or foliage? Whatever leaves. Chew these leaves.
I love leaves.
I don't understand it. We were at the steakhouse and Tammy and Guapo ordered a salad. It was literally just a fucking like piece of romaine lettuce with like ranch on it or something. I was like,
it's a fucking wedge salad. Okay. It's an iceberg wedge salad. It's a very famous dish.
It's a yes. conduit for the sauce.
No,
that's literally all it is. It's like, here's rabbit food.
It's iceberg. Like, it's an iceberg.
Wedge.
Yeah, it's a head cut into wedges, and then it's draped with, you know, some ranch dressing, maybe some bacon, some
okay.
Onions.
Didn't have any of that.
Didn't have a little tomatoes. It had. Tomatoes.
It definitely had bacon.
It definitely had bacon. And it definitely had ranch.
I had it twice. It had Guapo. Bacon on it.
Tell them what it had.
Ranch and bacon.
It had bacon and ranch.
All right, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, that's not what I saw.
There was little brown pieces in it, Burke.
Mm-hmm.
It was mixed in with the ranch.
There's probably a little bit of
I didn't see anything brown, and it didn't look like a wedge. It looked like it was just a giant leaf.
I mean, it didn't look very... I don't know what a wedge... It just looked like a cut-off top of the iceberg lettuce. Like, I just went into the grocery store and just cut...
Yeah.
Did you see the clam chowder?
Yes.
Are you a clam chowder fan?
No.
I am.
Of course. Absolutely you're not.
I am.
Clam chowder was really good. It was just like
New England or Manhattan?
New England. So they just brought you a bowl, and then it had all the clam, like chunks of clam in it, and then they poured the chowder over top of it. It was really, really good.
I wasn't a big fan of it.
I gave it a
6.5 out of 10.
So like a 6.5 from Conrad is like an 8. On anybody else's list.
You said the fucking, what was it? The Amici Crudo was good.
It was very good.
If you ever had that anywhere else, you're just like, okay, this
I've
is okay.
I've had Amici Crudo at a lot of places. I thought it was very good.
There you go.
You guys are wild.
I'm shocked how easy you guys are to please. Really impressive. Like Guapa got free meat from a steakhouse. Of course, that was the best place he's ever fucking eaten.
Because it's free. Yeah.
Like, I don't know, man. That was world class. It's like you live in the city of steakhouses. Like, the 10 of the best steakhouses in the world are here, and you're on a fucking Virgin cruise ship. Like, I don't know if I've ever had anything better.
If it was John George, no, but it was still pretty fucking.
I don't think it was Echo. It was mid. I asked for a baked potato. They go, all we have is twice baked potatoes. I was like, oh, okay, I understand. She goes, oh, but actually, I think they can just give you the first version of it before they twice bake it. I was like, oh, okay, that's great. Which is
making it just a baked potato,
right? Which is just making it. So I asked her for all the trimmings of a baked potato because like they were putting like a bunch of cream and shit on the twice bake that I didn't want, right? So I was like, okay, well, you know, I'll just take like some butter and bacon bits on the side. And she looked at me very confused, and I didn't understand why until I received my potato. And it was literally just like 6 roasted potatoes. And I'm just like, what are we doing here?
Like one big potato.
Yeah, you want
to. That's what a baked potato is.
Yeah, it was kind of weird.
Wait,
and a twice baked potato.
There were the small red ones?
No, they were just like quarter cubes of potatoes.
Like, yeah, they just took the baked potato and cut it up.
Like, it wasn't still in the skin.
None of that stuff. I was just like, I think you guys are a little... I'm not a restaurant connoisseur, but I think you're a little confused what a twice baked potato is, because I made them in home ec, and I gotta tell you, they still look like baked potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
They just, you know, get baked the second time.
I think they did that, like stuff like that just to, like, not... waste so much food,
yeah,
I guess.
Well, I'm pretty sure that it was like it was. I don't think it was like prepped there because having eaten my once baked potato, they were frozen. Mm-hmm. Like they were 100% frozen.
Okay.
But you know, best steakhouse I've ever been at.
I didn't say that.
Nobody said that.
Honestly, I wasn't even talking about the steak. Like the steak was like whatever. But
it's
like,
about the ambiance.
It was about like all the other stuff. Like the clam chowder.
A New York strip to your room.
Well, that was nice.
To your room.
You know, it was like free to your room. Again, free. Free.
Shut up. Yeah, just shut up.
Just shut up, Berkey. You don't know what you're talking about.
I did order one to the game one of the nights that I was there. Mm-hmm. It was For, I'll tell you what, for delivery steak, it was fucking phenomenal.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
On a cruise ship.
Okay. So for that part, I'll
Thank
give
you.
It to you.
Yeah.
So I ordered it, and that's how I knew I wasn't going to like the twice baked potatoes, because it's the same. I had asked for a baked potato then as well.
And they just gave you the.
And the guy ordering the food, like, you know, he's just at a whim to whatever they say. He goes, I want a potato. They're like, okay, we'll give you the twice baked potato. And all I got was like these saucy potato cubes.
Mm-hmm.
I took a little bite. I'm like, well, no, thank you.
I ate them right up.
Of course you did. But
they come with Brussels sprouts too?
No, didn't get any sprouts.
They knew. That's they read the room there.
So I get this steak, and you know the strip is not huge, maybe 8 ounces, I would say.
Yeah,
10 at most.
Yeah.
And we're playing, and I ate it quite quickly, to the amazement of everybody around. Like, did you fucking inhale that thing? They gave you a butter knife. How are you done? It's like, well, I don't exactly need this thing to be a dining experience. Let's just get on with it.
Right. Give me kitchen, my protein.
And- the test kitchen was kind of weird. So,
oh, yeah.
So I ordered.
That seemed interesting.
So I ordered some food or whatnot, and one of the dishes was corn. So whatever. They were, everybody's at the table. I was.
Oh, wait. I think I saw a picture of this. It was like inspired corn or something.
I don't
right?
know what the fuck it was, but I came back to the table. I saw the corn. I went to go grab the
corn. It was like
corn.
A corn on a cob, right?
I went to go grab the corn on my with my hands,
yeah.
And it fucking squished in the butter.
Yeah.
It just melted. I was like, what is this? It was just paste.
Like this, it was like this creamy pasty thing, but like they put it in the shape, I don't know how they use it, some sort of mold or something
right.
that made it look like a piece of corn on the cob.
Yeah,
but it was not corn on the cob. It was something
else. It looked like that show Is This Cake?
Right. Yeah. Right.
They just show like a bunch of inanimate objects. It's on Netflix. They just show a bunch of inanimate objects. You have to decide if it's really that object or is it cake.
It's crazy because that show is like wild because like the shit looks exactly like it. Yeah. They'll do it.
I saw one. A woman was driving a BMW and then took a bite out of her steering wheel. It was fucking absurd.
Well, they did the most like I would be so tilted because they bring it out and it looks like the most delicious steak you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
You gotta cut into it. It's fucking cake. God damn it. I want a steak.
You'd be mad.
I would be mad. You'd probably be happy.
I'd be glad.
Yeah. I was so tilted about this corn. I went
to
go grab
were.
It. I read. I was like,
The Italian place was really good.
Oh, the shrimp pasta, the concept shrimp pasta. So the pasta was made out of shrimp, fresh shrimp. And it was so fucking good.
Yeah, you love that shit.
Yeah, I love
it. You make it at home all the time.
All the time.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the lead that we once again buried.
We do that.
It seems as though a final conclusion between the Peter Jetton, Tom Dwan saga has reached a conclusion. They went to arbitration, and according to Jetton's Twitter, Tom had lost and paid. There was a tweet or a handful of tweets that Peter put up last week at some time, all scrubbed from the internet now. He scrubbed his entire Twitter timeline dating back to 2022. So it seems as though that was probably a part of the agreement for him getting paid. But luckily, the internet being what it is, an article had captured all of these tweets. They embedded the tweets in there, which are now gone, but they also quoted them. I think you have that, right, Guap? I sent it
don't.
To
you. Did you put it in
podcast? Yeah, I put it in assets. So effectively, if I pull this link up, let me see. Here we go. Shout out to VIP Grinders doing the... No way. That's gone now too? Wow. Okay, so an hour ago this article existed. Now it's gone.
Okay.
Strange.
Interesting. What do you think it said?
Well, I know what it said.
I was going to say, what do you remember from the article?
I know what it said. Man, we got to start screenshotting stuff.
Let me see if I can pull it up on Guapo's computer.
Okay. Neither here nor there, I guess. But anyway, I'm actually more interested into why all this stuff's being scrubbed. So why? Like, it's strange to me that this is all getting taken down. But effectively, what the tweet said was something to the effect of went to arbitration with Tom. He did ultimately lose and paid. Thank you guys to everybody who followed along the story. And then he put up a follow-up tweet that said, it seems as though the sponsorship at ACR was a big catalyst into getting paid. Good luck to everybody else out there that Tom owes money to. The article went more into detail as far as like the whole timeline of what the back and forth was, which we've covered pretty efficiently over the last 3 weeks or so. But for anybody who hasn't seen them, the long and short of it was that Tom was backing Peter many years ago, I guess, and during a High Roller series, it appeared as though Peter was fronted money by a third party with Tom vouching for said money. So both Peter and the third party put up some amount. Tom was supposed to incur that debt as the backer. I guess Tom hadn't paid it back as of, you know, a few months ago when all of this started. And Peter decided to put a lot of social pressure on him. So there was a lot of back and forth. Tom did a bunch of interviews. Oh, look at you. Look at... This is why we keep Andre around, for sure. Mm-hmm. So if you scroll up, that's,
once every three
that's
years.
The actual tweet. So as expected, Tom lost an arbitration, and this has finally been resolved. Seems like the sponsorship deal is helping with insolvency. Good luck to everybody else he owes money to. Hopefully you guys can get paid eventually. So that was the first tweet. And then if you scroll down to the bottom, I think there was a follow-up tweet. But yeah, this article basically gave the entire rundown of what's been happening. You can keep going. Yeah, so here, Tom has agreed to escrow the money and go to arbitration. Thanks, everyone. So that was prior. That was about a month ago. The follow-up tweet where he had lost an arbitration was, I guess, April 5th. So midweek last week. But yeah, now all of that scrubbed from the internet, which is quite strange. I don't really know what to make of that, other than I suppose that it's part of the agreement.
Yeah, I just imagine that ACR probably paid the money, and it's just like, hey, if we're going to pay this money, we want to clean his name for as much as we can and take down all this.
So yeah. I obviously, we have no idea. We're just speculating.
No, of
course. Should get that out of the way first, but I think there's something there, right? Because Tom's not going to have the ability to get articles pulled.
Yeah.
At least, you know, I wouldn't even know where to begin to get some random fucking site to take an article down.
Whereas ACR does like marketing contracts with these people, so it's
they
like,
probably also have like lawyers on staff. Yeah. They can handle this type of stuff.
So it's like, hey, just, you know, scratch our back, we'll scratch yours.
Okay, real quick, I need to correct you.
Go on.
The link that you clicked.
Yeah.
You added a star at the end of it.
I did.
So if you just remove the asterisk, it'll work.
I didn't, but I don't. But I just copy and pasted it. How did I get a star in there?
Probably when you pressed enter.
Oh, maybe. Okay. Mm. Okay, so that link still exists, but still, it's literally the only one, which is very strange. Like usually, tweets like that, they get a lot of traction. Somebody will save it. We'll see it on a Reddit thread somewhere. You know, we'll see the screenshot of it passed along or whatever.
To be fair,
all gone.
I imagine the same thing happened with Peter, or like just to go to arbitration or something like that.
What do you mean?
Like just to have the tweets scrubbed. Like
as far as like
if,
why would he want to take them down?
Well, it was just maybe part of the agreement. Hey, if I lose arbitration, like I'll pay you immediately. Just take these tweets down. Like, why would he ever take them down otherwise?
Oh, I agree with you. I think that was part of.
Yeah,
but. It couldn't have been part of it initially, though, because he would have never tweeted it. Right? Like, if the agreement is...
What, that we're going to arbitration?
No. Once he won the arbitration, if the agreement were that he would have to scrub his Twitter timeline
and then
as a byproduct of getting paid...
Take it down.
Right, he wouldn't tweet to begin with. Maybe. Unless it was, like, one of those things where it's, like, there's a window where he hasn't been paid yet. And so he gets to post this, and then once he receives the money, just scrub it all?
Or so maybe even like circling back around, like, hey, you want 20,000, take all these tweets down? I don't know. Like,
I don't know either.
Yeah, I'm just speculating, like, I don't know. Why would anybody ever just go through and take, I don't know, 10 to 15 tweets
it's
down?
It's very weird to me.
I don't think strange. It's that unreasonable, though.
Right? No,
this happens in like law settlements all the time.
Yeah.
And it could just be... Let's say Jetton is 10% in the wrong or 15% in the wrong, mm-hmm. or things weren't accurate of what he wrote, but he was still in the right.
Right.
Then, you know, it makes sense. Okay, well, just take down your tweets and...
We'll move on.
We'll move mm-hmm. on, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess your points are pretty valid. It's just interesting to me because so much of it was forced public.
Yes.
Right. So like so much of this was actually handled in the public domain and Tom got platformed throughout the majority of it where Peter didn't. I mean, Peter's Twitter got amplified tremendously. And so his message got out that way, I suppose.
When you say Tom got platformed, do you mean like in a negative light?
Well, he did 90 minutes on Vertucci's podcast trying to explain this all away. He did two different interviews with Poker News. One was like 8 minutes long. One was like 45 minutes long. And then, you know, there were a bunch of other articles and stuff like that where he was quoted. That's a lot of airtime.
And he got the ACR sponsorship during that time, so he had even more lights on.
Which supposedly had already been happening. in the background for many months. It was just like ill-timed that, but maybe Peter knew that, right? Maybe that was part of the reason he went public when he did, knowing that the ACR sponsorship was going to be coming soon. And maybe this was an opportunity to get paid. Honestly, man, I feel so lucky not to have any money on the street in this regard. Like, I have loans out, and then I also have money that I know for a fact was just a gift for me and I'll never get paid. But like, all very much within my close circle of friends, and the expectation of payment, repayment, no payment type of thing has been clear from day one. So like, there's never a doubt in my mind of the money that I have out there, how much of it's coming back to me, and over what period of time. And I feel so fucking lucky for that, because this shaking people down in the public sphere, it just feels so grimy. In a sense, not in a sense that like you should be protecting the people that owe, because you absolutely shouldn't, right? But it's way more so that like it's just messy, right? Like, we're just like, we're publicly engaged now in two people's dirty laundry, where we can't possibly ever get the full story, right? And then these things have to go to arbitration. The arbiters are still going to be influenced somewhat by public perception and things of that nature. But then also, like, this is the most positive outcome I could imagine, because Tom actually has the money to pay. Most of the time, this stuff goes to arbitration. Like, I don't know if you guys recall, but the Viffer Jungle Man thing that happened on Spaces maybe a year ago or so, they actually turned it into a cartoon. with Judge Josh. It was very entertaining to watch.
Yeah.
Like, that basically reached a general consensus that Viffer owed. And, you know, nothing came of it. Like, Jungle's still not going to get paid. There's just, like, more of a public perception now that, like, Jungle's on the right. But who gives a shit whenever you have six figures out in the wind that you're just never going to see a return on? And man, like, we're so fucking sloppy in this area, in our community. So much free money just getting passed back and forth that could otherwise be earning, and it's kind of just getting lost in the abyss, you know. And you can't ever retroactively attribute interest to it, because how, you know, like, getting paid is just already challenging.
Nothing's like on the books, like on the official books as right. Well, you know, it's like nothing's like written down in a contract. It's correct. Just kind of like handshake deals. And then so stuff can get like, you know, blurred throughout the whole process.
And by the end of it all, like, you couldn't ask for interest for the money that you're needing to recoup, because it hasn't been earning for you for 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. Because at this point, you're happy to take cents on the dollar.
Yeah, right.
You know, there's so many people where it's just mm-hmm. like, it's been long,
it's like
enough.
Negative interest.
Of course. It's like, I'd be so thrilled with 60 cents on the dollar at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, how else are you ever going to pay me? This figure is way outside of your earning potential. And that has to just constantly happen. I mean, it's a big aspect of what drives this community, is lifetime losers find ways to stay in action and get money and continue to be lifetime losers. It's like, well, you know, we all effectively benefit off that, or at least all the people who are winning. But it's kind of like the harshest redistribution of wealth, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have winners who have profited in some sort of capacity. They either selfishly want to help someone, or they unselfishly want to help someone. But in either regard, a lot of times they're the ones who ultimately are having their money redistributed. It's just not going to work. You know, the model's broken. Yeah. Staking model's broken too. This is another whole other arena. Like, I forget who I was talking to recently, but they were basically asking me, like, do 50-50 deals even still exist? It's like, not really, and not mm-hmm. for the reasons that you think. Like, I think most people think that 50-50 deals are, like, awful for the backer. And they're not great, don't get me wrong. But they're really fucking bad for the backee, right? The only thing that makes them, like, slightly less bad is the fact that they can be dropped in makeup and then just, like, have this tab effectively washed, and, you know, they get to reset back to zero, which is now what makes it very bad for the investor. But yeah, I mean, like, the whole model of it is just, it's just so fundamentally broken, because it's so it's so predatory on the person playing. Effectively, what you're doing is you're borrowing at a very high interest rate, right? Like, okay, you get 50% of my action for 100% of the buy-in, but I always have to pay back the 100% of the buy-in. Mm-hmm. So you're basically paying this like 50% interest. And the only benefit that you get out of it is you don't have to have capital up front. And secondarily, if like you effectively go bankrupt, the debt gets washed, right? But imagine if that's the way you approach the real world,
right?
Where you took out just this high interest loan of like 50% on, like you took out a 50% mortgage on your house, right? So your house is worth $2 million. You borrow $500,000 at 50% interest, or $1 million at 50% interest, something like that. And then you just like lose it and can't pay, and they just take your house. Just like, well, you know, that's not very smart. Think you'd probably be judged by anybody with half a brain in that instance, you know? Yeah. I mean, that shit happens whenever you take it out at a relatively low interest,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, people overextend themselves, but it takes a lot of bad deals, a long period of time. In poker, like, you just make one bad deal. Like, you're just fucked, and you just can't really out-earn it is the biggest problem. I think now that we're starting to really understand what win rates are, especially in the MTT arena,
mm-hmm.
it's just so fucking capped. And now there's very low incentive for people to invest, and even lower incentive for people to take a deal where they're just giving up this massive amount of their win rate. So yeah, I these are the things that kind of keep me up at night with our industry of like, how does it move forward in its current state, right? Like, how do we have enough liquidity in the community as a whole to keep the churn kind of flowing and I don't want to say keep the winners winning, because that's not the goal, but to keep the break-even players around.
Somehow there's just, it seems like there's still like an
crypto
endless,
baby.
Yeah, an endless amount of money. Like, you're gonna, like, the World Series is coming up, and you're just gonna see massive fields and re-entries all over the place, and it's just like, where does this all this money come from?
Well, I think part of it is people still just aren't really sharp on the discussion we just had.
Yeah,
that backing really is not a great investment. Mm-hmm. I also think people think with their hearts and not with their heads quite frequently, yeah. And that keeps people in action. But I guess I'm thinking more about the overall model as a whole, right? Like,
when you say backing, you mean backing players, or
yeah.
being a player and being backed?
Both. But yeah, actually, I just mean both. It's unsustainable from the player side, and it's not very lucrative from the investor side. The best thing you have going for you as the investor is that it's like, it's essentially risk-free investment for a really high return. But, you know, you have to have endless capital and be backing a winner, right? Because like, the second that you realize you're backing a loser, if you don't cut ties, then you're just throwing good money after bad. You get wiped. Yeah, you're in a shit coin. But I guess I'm speaking more to the model as a whole. Like, if we were to examine the entire landscape of poker and guesstimate how many people are playing 100% of their own dime, we have to assume that even from small stakes up, it has to be a pretty small percentage, like maybe sub 25,
mm-hmm.
Which means 75% of the community is needing. And again, these are guesstimates. Like, right. I have no fucking clue, yeah. But let's assume 75% of the community is needing some sort of financial aid in their career, right? Some sort of investment.
Yeah. And this is, I think also you have to separate people playing for a living and then people just recreational play. Cause like, most recreational players
probably have a big piece of themselves.
Yeah. Probably have most, if not all of themselves. Right. Cause they don't play that often.
Yeah.
They do play.
But do we think more of the community than 25% is rec?
I mean,
maybe it is.
Yeah.
Maybe well, it is. It maybe that's what's keeping things afloat.
And then also that depends on the stake level as well.
Well, just the whole community.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Right?
I would say so.
Okay, so let's say maybe half.
Yeah.
And let's assume that, like, you know, 10% of the other half are winners. So 40% of the community needs some sort of financial aid.
Yeah.
That's still a large chunk. And whether you're talking about backing, buying and selling, or whatever the case may be, it still makes the model very difficult to sustain, because of the 60% that's taking all of themselves, the vast majority of them can't be winning, right? Like, it's too much of the community. Maybe only 10 to 15% of them are winning on top of that, right? So they're all losing money. A big chunk of the people that are being invested in are losing money, but you assume the people that are being invested in are closer to being break-even or winning than the people who are actually backing themselves, right? Because we're assuming a lot of those are the recreationals that are actually losing money. So basically all I'm arriving at is it does seem like somewhere along the line in the near or maybe the distant future, poker has to kind of diverge and there has to be a version where players are de-risked and just their skill alone earns. And I don't know what that looks like. I don't know if it's like some sort of gamification where they're playing like, you know, fucking Clash of the Titans type of style app and they're just earning rake back or whatever. I don't know what the ultimate model looks like. I don't know if it becomes a sport model where casinos head teams and have rosters and they all get to play for free. And, you know, I mean, I think this is very doable in the high stakes realm, right? It's very small. So if we're talking about like the super high rollers, Triton, Poker Go Cup, that collection of maybe 100 events,
right? But
year.
they would then in turn have to earn their skills or their likeness would have to earn money for
correct.
The casino or right. whoever is backing them for yeah. them to make them incentivized to do it.
Right. You're absolutely right. So it's whatever encompasses that model, because that still is truly the model of poker. That's why rooms exist.
Right.
It's a loss leader. The assumption is by having this space taken up by poker tables, our casino will be better for it.
Mm-hmm.
Our pit games will do better. Our hotel rooms will sell more, et cetera, et cetera. And 20 years in, I think they're starting to find out that experiment isn't true. And poker rooms aren't very self-sustaining, right? So something, again, like whether we're talking about from the player side of things or we're talking about from the management side of things, the current model isn't ideal, right? The rake can't continue to go up. Otherwise, the players will cease to exist. And the players can't continue to fund a small percentage of the winners. Otherwise, they'll cease to exist.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like currently what we're doing is we're just having winners redistribute a lot of their profits back into the break-even portion of the economy to keep the ecosystem sustaining. But at some point, like, there's going to be a push to eliminate that, I think. Like, smart people continually exit the top. And the more that happens, the more liquidity leaves the space as a whole, which puts us back at square one. Like, you know, how does this thing grow? WSOP, I guess. I don't fucking know.
50 days away.
Run that once a year. All right, let's get to it in the muck and then get out of here.
Okay, this in the muck comes from the worldwide interwebs. We're doing an online hand here from GG, and it's from the person's name is Reg, so they're a Reg. And the hand is, I think they're playing, yeah, they're playing 25 cent, 50 cent. So folds to the hijack. It's also a big ante game, so there's a $2 ante.
Yeah.
So a pretty big ante game. And so hijack opens to $2 and it folds to our hero in the big blind with jack 10 of spades. We get a flop of jack of diamonds, 10 of diamonds, deuce of hearts. So we flop top two. We go ahead and check. The low jack bets about half pot, which is $3.13. And we decide to check raise to $13.50. We're met with a call. And the turn is the three of hearts, now putting two hearts as well as two diamonds on the board. And now we go for a pretty big bet of about 90%, maybe 85%, which is 28 into 33, leaving ourselves 80 behind or 60 behind effectively. And the river is another three of spades, and we decide to check, and our opponent checks back ace queen off and we win the hand. So How we're in the muck here is, you know, our opponent had a few things he was worried about. He didn't know if he should be three betting preflop with his hand, and then he was unsure of the sizing on the flop and on the turn, and then obviously the river, where now any overpair beats him with the board running out three. He didn't know how to proceed. Should he bet? Should he block bet? He thought, well, if I block bet, maybe I can get called by like a worse, you know, maybe a worse jack, like king, or like, you know, king jack or queen jack, hands like that. But I don't know. What do we think?
I think his check on the river is actually, feels like it's okay, because I think he's going to play his overpairs.
That's what he said. He said he's beat by, you know, a lot of like aces through queens, but also, you know, maybe those hands play a little differently on the
flipper. You also
turn.
Have to surrender the majority of your front door flush draws on the river. You're going to check raise bet and then give up.
Mm-hmm.
I actually played a very similar hand as this one against JRB in the game, and I was livid that he got three streets of value versus me because I had like the one fucking hand. So I opened ace jack suited under the gun.
I was gonna say, you have like ace jack, yeah.
Yeah, he defended big blind, and it came, and the button was in there also. It came jack 9-3, two diamonds. I have like ace jack black. I see bet, button folds. He check raises huge. I call. Turn is the three of the back door. So now there's two flush draws.
Mm-hmm.
He bets like pot, which is like so concerning to me. Actually, it might have been a brick three, but anyway, between my jack and the board, there are zero combinations of jack three suited, zero combinations of 9-3 suited remaining. So like, he has no full houses, he has no trips, and you know, basically he has like quad threes or pocket nines for value, and like literally that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, okay, this guy has a combo draw 100% of the time. I'm just gonna call and then pick off his river bluff. So I call. And then the river's like, you know, a stone brick, like a black four. And he bets 35% pot. And I'm just like, okay, I mean, I guess he's just like hedging, just hoping I fold out better mm-hmm. front door draws. And I call and he just shows jack nine off. And it's like, how on earth are you ever betting top pair when bottom pair, like I literally just have queens plus jam on you and you want to hate your life,
right?
Whereas like if you check, I could just jam king queen of the front door,
right, and just call.
Yeah, and then you just have a bluff catcher that I was livid that I just had a fucking jack, because it's mm-hmm. so hard to have a jack there obviously when you have top two. So I think for that specific reason, and you couple that with the fact that you're giving up your front door draw bluffs on that you would check raise. So when he has a hand like, say, queen eight of diamonds, that's going to give up on the end. He has a hand like king nine of diamonds. These hands are going to give up on the end. And that's really important because you also don't want to just have pure check folds. So you need to have some hands that can call.
Yeah. So he said that if he likes on the river, if he would have got jammed on, he probably most likely would have called because, you know, he unblocks all
right.
of all the natural bluffs.
Yeah. And that's the proper way to think about this spot for sure. You have a very good bluff catcher. The difference, the difference between Jack 10 and like Queen Jack
mm-hmm.
is roughly going to be the same. Queen Jack, you reduce the amount of pocket queens that they have. Jack 10, you reduce the full houses, which, you know, both are going to be relatively important. Mm-hmm. You also beat like a Jack that goes for thin value.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you check and he has Ace Jack, he's not going to forego a bet here. He certainly is going to have to stick it in here at least some of the time, maybe not always.
I mean, it feels like a lot of jacks probably bet this river, like yeah. Queen Jack as well.
No, you can't get that. Never. What are you getting called by? It just has to be 10x of hearts or like a really bad Jack X of hearts. But I don't think Jack X of hearts takes that line. I think it would just check raise check.
Yeah.
I think that's a big aspect that people forget. Like, just because you check raise the flop on a dynamic board like this doesn't mean that you always follow through with a turn bet. Mm-hmm. So the turn bet's actually quite polarizing. Without having looked at the sim, I would guess, based off the fact that there are two flush draws on the turn, we go bigger. He, I think, went 2E, but I think we could probably go slightly larger.
Right. So he said that he was, you know, like, I think they were multi-tabling, mm-hmm. and, you know, felt like under the pressure of the time and trying to figure out, you know, like what is 2E? What is my sizing? Oh man, my time's running out. For someone like that was feeling a pressure like that, should they play less tables? Should they maybe study more of you know what E or 2E or 3E is?
Well, on, I mean,
with certain stack to putt ratio.
When you're playing online, you can just have a it's not cheating to have a geo chart up.
Yeah,
right. Like it's nowhere near the same as having like a range chart up or RTA or whatever. Like you're just having a rubric up that you can quickly look at and say like, okay, the SPR here is 3. What's 2E? 80% okay.
Yeah.
But it's like, I also just know that inherently because I've memorized like that's certain.
Yeah. You can take some time and memorize the chart itself.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of inherent to you and you can, you know, especially when you're multi-tabling, you need to think very quickly.
Yeah.
When you say we can go bigger on the turn, like normally, yes, I understand.
But usually like, we're capped at geo size, but like not when
there's two flush draws on the board.
Well, specifically not when GO2 is not. When GO2 is less than pot,
yeah,
we can go above it.
Okay. And now, what size would you think we can use here?
I think...
Because, like, we're less... Like,
I think probably pot.
So, okay. All right.
I don't think we're going to play jams, but we might play jams.
I was going to say, the only thing can be jams, really.
I could see us playing some jams.
I see the more jams than, like, there can't be really any over bets. Right?
No. It's I think it's going to be either pot or jam pot. Or maybe a combination of both.
Okay.
I would guess with Jack 10 black, we want to put in as much money as humanly possible.
Yeah, I would actually think that we jam here.
I can see that.
That's what my question was alluding to.
He said he thought about that too, but he thought it was too big of a bet.
Yeah, I don't think that. 300% pot. So I think that's like
a thing.
An old thing. Like an old tale though. Like there's like... I feel like in this new school of poker, we find bigger sizings that we were never comfortable using in the past.
Things that seemed egregious are now
things
like
that
just
seemed
a
egregious
thing.
Are high fives
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know.
Well, because we know how to balance them now.
Yeah.
In 2010, if you faced a 3x pot jam on the turn,
it was just the nuts.
It was always just, you know, top two or a set.
Yeah, right. Of course.
But like people are good enough now that they can find a way to do it with like 8-9 of hearts, 8-9 of diamonds type of hands.
Yeah.
And also, like, people's tolerance to calling is much different. Like, they're not going to fold a combo draw to a jam.
Yeah.
At least not, like, one that may dominate other draws.
Mm-hmm. So, it's just
like, ace, king of diamonds probably doesn't fold.
So, everybody just learned more about the game, basically, when it comes down to it. And also, like, I feel
it's the removal of the stigma of having to get your money in quote-unquote good.
Good, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? And it's about, like, how your hand plays versus a range, no longer how your hand plays versus a hand. I think that's the biggest difference, right? Because, like, if you have ace, king of diamonds here and you get shoved on and you only think to yourself, well, shit, I'm up against, like, two pair. I can't call this hand because I'm getting it in really, really bad.
Yeah, meanwhile, he has king, queen of hearts.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like if you give them jack 10 and king, queen,
and
now all of a sudden it's like a fist
snap
pump
call. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think that matters. All right, let's take a look and see what the Wiz wants us to do. So of course we're gonna play pre or check. Let's see, jack 10 suited. Yeah, so, it looks like it mixes pre.
I was gonna say, yeah, pre flop is like it should
it's
mix
about 50 50
right?
Okay, roughly 50-50. Now mind you, I couldn't really program for the larger ante, so this is just assuming a big blind ante, which this is actually going to be four times as much.
Yeah. And he was facing a 4x open as well,
so. Right. And again, this is against the 2.5x open. So these things are going to skew pre-flop ranges a little bit.
The bigger the opening, the less you're going to 3-bet, right? You're
going
to 3-bet more.
No. Because they coincide. So there's more money in the pot.
Right.
So the bigger open is justified.
Okay.
Right. So the bigger open just becomes relatively standard with an ante that large. The smaller the open, the more you would call. The larger the open, the more you would 3-bet. So if he opened to 10x, we would play much more 3-bet or fold.
Gotcha.
But when he's just opening for like a standard size, which is in this instance basically like 66% pot, or a little bit more, maybe 75% pot, that's just pretty standard. So we're going to respond with a pretty standard range.
Right.
Right. It only feels egregious according to what the normal opening size is. But remember, that's predicated off of normal dinosaur ranges of two blinds, no ante.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're also a little bit deeper here too, so I think we start to hand like 220 big blinds effective. So let's just roll with these ranges. I think that they're pretty reasonable. You can see LoJack just has a pure range bet here for 40%. He chose 50 in game. That's not going to change theory at all. So let's just roll through this as played in theory. And then we have a response of 35% call, 10% check raise. So we are doing a fair amount of raising here. And you can see that we're going to build it around the value, of course. So tens that we flat pre, which it looks like tens is nearly a pure call pre.
Wait, you said 35% call. I think you're on 10-9 suited.
What are you talking about?
No, he means the whole range.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Welcome back. So, yeah, it looks like it's going to be about a pot size check raise. We went a little bit bigger in game. So the actual theoretical check raise size here is 92%. I think we went something like 110%. Again, this isn't going to change the frequencies or the theory or anything like that at all. You can see Jack-10 suited is just completely pure.
Yeah.
So we're never missing that one. Jack-10 off, mostly pure, but basically whenever we have the 10 of spades, it looks like it does a little bit more calling.
Why is this?
Tough to know.
Yeah, I kind of don't get that. Because
it's choosing the combinations that don't block front door or back door.
I thought we would want to. I thought we'd want to have the 10 of hearts in our hand to call.
Why?
Oh, maybe I'm thinking about this differently, backwards. Because I would think that we'd want to block their calls, but that's not true. No. Okay. Never mind.
Yeah. I mean, they're range betting, so us having the 10 of hearts isn't going to reduce their combos of continues that much.
Yeah.
Just reduces, no 10x can fold.
It reduces some of their backdoor flush draws.
Right, but like if we raise and we look at their response, they don't fold
10x. No 10x folds, yeah.
Right? Yeah. So it's just like it doesn't really matter. Although, well, that's not true. Queen 10 folds.
Mm.
Mm. But there you go.
Interesting.
God, I fold way too much.
yeah. Check raise that middle pair.
Is if I get check raise and I have a 10 in my hand, I'm like, I'm not loving it.
This is exactly why we don't want to have the 10 of hearts.
Okay.
Because we don't want queen 10 to fold.
Okay.
Right? Like when we have the 10 of hearts in our hand, he no longer has queen 10 of hearts, which means that he folds much more frequently.
Okay, makes sense.
Same thing with his offsuit variety. You can see now he actually folds. Well, it cares about the hearts because that's what we bluff with. So it's just like a mix. Like when it's the queen of hearts, 10 of spades, it folds. When it's the queen of spades, 10 of hearts, it folds because it's blocking like some of our potential bluffs.
Mm-hmm.
But then it basically goes for it whenever it has the backdoor queen of diamonds for a 3-bet. And it basically plays like a lot of call whenever it has like the double combo or plays pure call, the queen of diamonds, 10 of hearts.
Okay.
This is very nuanced and not really important to the overall strategy.
Going back to what Guapo said, where he's like, well, damn, like if I have a 10 there, like I'm just like folding way too, I'm just folding way too much. But I mean, maybe not because you're playing in environments where people aren't finding 30%. 35% check raises.
10% here. Check raises.
But they're going to check raise.
I thought you said the check raise.
35% calls.
Oh, okay.
Especially
sorry,
like in
sorry.
This online yeah. environment, they're going to be check raising like all the king, queen, a lot of the flush yeah. draws or yeah, double maybe, yeah. double draws.
Well,
like,
the big thing that you have to be, the big thing you have to be conscious of is that a lot of the 2x range is playing raise here. So look how aggressive the 2x range is.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that this is like, the solver really loves going
for the bottom pair
trip draw, the bottom set block.
This is big blind response?
Yes. So a lot of our aggression is going to come out of there, and then everything else is just going to be like a flurry of, you know, kind of mixed equity
value
like,
and equity. Yeah.
Yeah. You see like the combo draws, the combo backdoors, 9-8 of diamonds, 9-8 of hearts. These are playing really aggressively. I imagine we're going to see the same thing out of like the queen 9, king 9s. Yeah. So queen 9 of hearts, queen 9 of diamonds, pure.
A lot of the like higher equity, no, like less showdown kind of hands.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the value side, of course, it's just built out of like the top 2+ type of regions. So you have Jack 10, you have Jacks, you have 10s, which I'm really shocked that Jacks and 10s are playing so much call pre, but I guess it's a low Jack open, so it's a little bit tighter and you just don't gain that much from 3-betting these hands. at a high frequency. So like Jackson 10s are like 90% calls pre. You have Jack 10 off. So this like little quadrant here of hands that really smash the top are what we're building the majority of our check raising out of. And you can see that they don't do very much calling at all. We're not that interested in protecting our range.
You tend to be a little more polar when you're in the big blind as opposed to like in the small blind as well, right?
And also...
It depends on the board texture. You can't really say that as just a blanketed statement.
I mean preflop as your preflop as your preflop three bet.
Yeah. I mean, you can see we even flat kings right. some of the time. Yeah.
The reason why we're just raising all the time is because we sunblock everything. Like when we have these hands. Like we unblock all the draws.
Yeah, we unblock their equity, but we heavily block all their one pairs.
Yeah.
That's not great. I mean, you still want to be able to get multiple streets of value. Like you don't want to just only be up against draws, because now with the board texture changes, your value goes to shit.
Yeah.
Which is a bit problematic. And that's probably a big reason why you see like Ace Jack playing a little bit more passively. So it prefers the backdoor variety, because it's going to come with a lot more inherent equity as turns kind of fall as they may. You know, like the three of hearts on the turn in this instance, that's a great card for Ace Jack of hearts. Whether we remain aggressive or not, the equity of the hand actually just went up. Same thing with like King Queen. It's going to be very particular. The equity of these hands are already relatively high, so we need to get to showdown with King Queen in some sort of capacity. We need to realize it. It doesn't need to play nearly as aggressively, but we want to have some of it in there. So we go the combo route, right? King Queen of diamonds, King Queen of hearts. These are going to be a lot more aggressive.
I'm really curious on seeing what size Ace Jack of hearts takes on the turn.
I imagine it's going to do a fair amount of checking, but I think, yeah, again, I think there's only going to be one size. I ran it for one size, so that's going to make it a little bit more sticky, I guess. But so now here's the response to the check raise. You can see there's a little bit of three betting that takes place. Again, building it off of the same portion of range, less the Jack 10. Reason being is that Jack 10 just loses the deuces, whereas Jacks and 10s, they overset the deuces, which is worth a lot because we're purely check raising deuces, as you can see here. He's going to go ahead and continue through a call. We're going to see the three of heart turn. And yeah, as I suspected, we're playing pot or all in.
Ooh, that Jack 10 suited looks nice. Yeah, hold that.
So, and as I kind of suspected, it's coming from the combo draws that we're doing some ripping. So Queen 9 of hearts for the backdoor. Likes jamming at a much higher frequency. Queen 9 of diamonds, a much lower frequency, but still in there. 9-8 of diamonds, pure shove. 9-8 of hearts, a lot less.
Shout out to the 8 deuce of diamonds out there. I see you, baby. Yep.
That's right.
Run that
around.
Shit.
Mm-hmm. Is the reason the Queen 9 of diamonds slowing down is because he could have a bigger draw? Like a better draw?
No, I think it's because you dominate more of his draws. Right? Because like when you look at 9-8 of diamonds, it's pure.
Yeah.
When you see these like 8 deuce of diamonds and stuff, remember that like with the ante that big, you're not folding any suited hands pre-flop.
Right, these are in here actually probably less than you would actually see in
practice.
Right. Like you should almost probably have these pure.
Yeah.
Now when you say when we have Queen 9 of diamonds and we're blocking their draws, because like
not blocking, I'm saying we're dominating.
But like, yeah, I guess. I was
going to say 8-7 of diamonds. Yeah. Like, we don't want to just shove and get that hand to fold.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, having a 9 in the hand, like, we probably don't want that card.
Well, it's not ideal, but that's why you see, like, King Queen of diamonds doesn't jam at all.
Doesn't jam, yeah, okay.
Right? Because, you know, the higher up in the draw equity we go, the less pressure we need to apply to them, because we only get called by better then.
It makes sense.
Right? So yeah, the jamming range is largely just built out of combo draws and then value that needs protection. You can see 8-7 of diamonds, another good combo to just rip it with. The Jack 10 off, Jack 10 suited, these are going to play pure jam. Obviously, Jack 10 of hearts does not jam, nor should it, because it has too much board coverage and backdoor equity.
So it's supposed between pot and check.
Yeah, and you know, if you play 2E and check here, or sorry, 2E and jam, that's going to be fine. Two, mm-hmm. which is what our player in real time did. And yeah, you can see a lot of follow through here with the 2X type of region, specifically whenever it had a front door. That's going to follow through a little bit more often. Jack deuce is two pairs, so that's a little bit different. Same with 10 deuce. But yeah, like the 8 deuce, it's just yellowing it. 7 deuce of diamonds, it's just betting. I'm not really sure why it's preferring the 8 over the 7. But in any event, you know, this becomes really tricky. This is where a lot of the learning takes place.
Do you think is it because it blocks the 9-8? So it blocks like the call off of like 9-8 dime.
If it calls off, I'm not really sure that it does. We can see what the response is versus jam. Yeah, 9-8's pure fold.
Yeah.
So it doesn't start to call the combo draws until king. I mean, it calls all the pair plus draws. So king queen of diamonds pure calls, king queen of hearts calls half the time. That's the lowest combo draw that is a pure call. Everything else is pair plus, right? And I don't think, I guess, is there 10-9? Nope. 10-9 of hearts pure fold.
I wonder why they picked the 8 over the 7 then.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that's super important. It's very nuanced. Yeah. But again, like, that's where a lot of the learning takes place, is figuring out how to balance this particular 2x region and making sure that you're not just check raise checking it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have follow throughs. Ace jack of hearts, as I suppose, checks really high frequency, goes for the pot size bet. Otherwise, no reason to be all in with it. It's way too valuable. And you don't want to just position yourself to only get called by better. And you can see that with our overpairs too. Like, kings, still way too valuable. Don't need to be jamming it. We can check it at some frequency to protect that range. We can go for the check jam even, et cetera, et cetera. So our player picks 80%, which is 2E. That's fine. Theory goes pot, also fine. And we can see that in position here is still going to continue with a call. Basically with all of the hands that have reasonable equity. Now, it's important to note here that, like, ace king off, ace queen off, even ace 10 off and ace jack begin folding at a really, really, really high frequency. And obviously this is going to be suit dependent when you're talking about the ace jack, but everything else is just like, it's not going to draw to a dirty gut shot, right? It's not going to draw to a dirty 10. It's not going to draw to a dirty ace where we can just have hands like king queen. So it's really critical that as the defender here, you understand how to properly balance your range such that you're still continuing with hands that are drawing live and possess a high amount of equity, but you don't put yourself in a position to just rip off a dirty out and then get jammed on. We're already going to be doing that with our combo draws.
Yeah.
Right?
King, queen of hearts or...
Yeah, king, queen of hearts, ace, queen of hearts, ace, queen of diamonds. All of our king, queen suited is continuing, right? So we have king, queen of spades in there, which is potentially going to have us drawing to the ace of diamonds, the nine of hearts, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really need to be getting in there with like these ace, king offs, ace, queen off type of hands. We already have enough coverage there with our suited aces.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's really important to understand. So he continues through a call one more time, and we see, what was it, the three of spades on the river?
Yep.
Okay. So three of spades, river. Whoever said block, you can see that that is a small portion of the strategy, but it, you can pretty much eliminate it.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically jam or check. You know, we have this 2% blocking range with basically just ace jack suited, and you can just shift that to a check. It's going to do just fine. It's going to protect your range. You're going to have a nice check call with this type of holding. So really the block is not a viable strategy. And as we suspected, jack 10, pure check. You just block way too much of the hands that can call you that are worse.
Well, that's good, because that's what our player's analysis kind of was.
Yeah. Man, quite honestly.
He's not in the muck at all. He played his hand really well.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, this is like one of the best feelings in poker when we check this river, because like we get bluffed so many times here. The bet comes through on the other side so many times, and you don't even think about it. You just beat them in with like all hands of like semi-value.
Yeah, and that's kind of the ironic part here is that so we do proceed with a check. And our opponent checks down a hand that just like doesn't really exist, right? So ace queen is just not, I can't even highlight.
So that was a question I was going to have at the end. You see ace queen at the end. I wasn't expecting to see ace queen off.
Yeah, right? Nor should you.
What, it's probably just folds turn,
your,
right?
It what does. Is your pure adjustment folds. When you, like, whether it's how you build your image around your opponent after that, or whether it's how you play afterwards?
When you see a mistake like that?
When you see a mistake like that, how do you capitalize off of it?
Well, I just think you just think to yourself, he's too wide or too tight, and you just kind of like move your barometer from there.
Well, I agree with that to some degree. To specify what Conrad's kind of saying, it's I would be sure to increase my sizing on the turn because I want to punish that error there. And I would also probably increase my checking frequency on the river because he should now be following through with the bluff. Now, the thing is, he didn't bluff. So that in turn would kind of put me just focusing on the turn play then. It's like, if I can't count on him punting off with a mistake that he had made on the turn on the river, then I want to maximize that punishment on the turn.
So you bet 40 into 33? You bet.
I would bet full pot.
You said that was the adjustment.
Or just
That was the theory. So he bet 2E, which was 80%. I would bet full pot, maybe slightly more.
Okay.
Maybe like, you know, basically it comes down to SPR, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to put yourself in a position where he stops making that error. So if we jam, which is correct with our hand.
Oh, I see.
Ace queen always folds.
You just milk him for a couple blinds.
Yeah, exactly.
I see.
Now it's really tricky on that type of texture. I may not even attempt to exploit because you just start playing this fool's errand where you're unsure where the fuck you're at on the end because the texture is going to change so often. That I might just play my hand the way I'm supposed to play my hand. Mm-hmm. Just jam my Jack 10, jam my pocket deuces. You know, just like, let's get the fucking money in with the best of it. And yeah, I lose out on, let's see how much EV we actually end up losing out on. So
this is by jamming on the turn?
No. Well, yeah. If this is if we do something that forces him to fold ace queen. So basically, he's giving up 12 big blinds. He's losing a lot by calling ace queen on the turn. Maybe I don't want to do things that reduce this error.
He's just swatting him in there.
Wow. So the pot on the turn at this point is 50. So we bet 53 into 63, I think, on the turn. Oh, no, sorry. It's 100% pot. So we bet 53 into 50. So the pot's 188, and he's losing 12 blinds. So he's basically losing like 7.5% pot share. Pretty big error. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not the biggest error he could make, that's for sure. Like, he could call a hand like 7-6 off. Wow, that's somehow losing less. That's actually
how
that's actually remarkable,
because
it's drawing to nothing.
It's drawing to a pair where the ace queen might be dirty.
No,
I don't know.
No, I that's remarkable. Yeah, that's really strange to me.
What's Wait, are you hand? Sure that's suited, right? You look at the suit.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I am looking at suit.
Yeah, you're looking at suit.
Oh, because it's diamonds.
Yeah, you're looking at suit. Yeah,
okay. Yeah. Okay, so here's a better example. He could call with like nines. This is losing like 16 big blinds, which becomes a lot worse. Let me see what else. He could call with... No, there aren't many hands you could play worse than ace queen. Yeah, actually, truly, like, looking through all the hands that fold, having ace queen on the river is your second worst possible candidate to pocket nines.
Shout out to Reg, why don't you go clip this out, send it to your boy's email.
Found it. It's pocket eights. If somehow like, he only has it 1% of the time, but if somehow he gets to the river with pocket eights, he's dusting 23 big blinds on the turn. Which is effectively now going to be 15% pot share. That's a big fucking error, right? So if somehow we played this hand and he just shows down eights, it's like, okay, I get to go so much thinner for value now on the turn, right? Like, now all that ace-jack checking that we're doing with ace-jack of hearts is a big no-no. All of the combo draw checking that we're doing with like 10x of hearts, these types of hands, big no-no. We have to bet for thin value if we're starting to see errors like that occur.
Okay, so you take the top of your checking range.
Yes.
And you shove that into your bet.
Yes, exactly. So it's not even so much about manipulating the size that much anymore. I think we just stick to theory, right? It's about expanding what types of hands fit into the bets, as opposed to trying to worry about balancing our passive range. Because the fact is, he's just clearly not folding, right? Like, these are pure folds that are torching. And he showed up with one of them on the river.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he could be making errors with a lot of other hands. Like, he's probably making a ton of errors. Because, like, look at all these flush draws that are supposed to fold versus pot. Like,
right.
These king high flush draws just probably aren't ever folding in theory. Not.
He's folding. I'm sure he's folding eights because the ace can't.
Yeah,
ace just eights can't
and nines,
win.
Right, eights
right,
and nines probably
like,
fold.
He looks at ace queen. He's like, well, I can still make the nuts, you know.
Yeah, but like, you know, how often does queen jack off fold at this point? How often does queen ten off find a fold right, at this point? You know, right. It's like this is a really great question, Andre, because this really can demonstrate, if you dig in a little bit, how big the errors are that your opposition is making. And that in turn should really give him a lot of comfort for his river play, because though he wasn't sure in real time what his hand was supposed to do, it becomes a very clear check now.
Because he should be too wide and have exactly, too many bluffs.
Exactly.
Yes. My thinking is so warped.
Go on.
I'm thinking because he has the ability to sort of bluff catch, if you want to call it that, on the turn, when he's got such a dog shit hand. When we get to the river, I feel like maybe he can just...
But he can't because...
Wait, you mean the ace-queen can hero call? No.
How?
I mean, ace high?
I mean, what's he doing calling on the turn?
He's drawing to a king.
He's got four outs to stack his ass.
You're not getting a great price.
Well, sure, but like, you
if
know.
If I get there, you know, who right, cares? Think, well,
maybe there's a world where my ace or my queen is good, too. Well,
if I get there, math works, okay?
This bitch is playing bingo right now, okay?
Fucking ankle biters, man. But yeah, big shout out to Reg. You did a great job. You played the hand really well. Appreciate the question from Andre. I think that did a great job of exemplifying like how we deviate in game, and I think that's probably the most important point. If you guys find yourself in the muck, be sure to head to our Discord. We have an entire forum dedicated to In the Muck. We'd love your submissions so that we can talk about them on air. You can find that by hitting hashtag Discord in the chat, or you can head to @onlyfriends_pod. It is now the pinned tweet.
Did it
on our Twitter page. Just follow the link to our Discord channel. You'll be able to figure it out from there. Also, we have a Twitter Tuesday poll. Hold on, I gotta get that up. Where's it at? Okay. So our Twitter Tuesday prompt is, if you could go back in time and give yourself 5 words of advice at the start of your poker journey, what would they be? What would those 5 words be? Don't bother ever folding fish. Is that five?
Sure.
Just quit before you start. There you go.
Don't do business with
enter here.
Yeah,
that's a good one. Big shout out to GTO Wizard for the In the Muck segment. We appreciate them. If you guys are interested in GTO Wizard AI, which is what we demonstrated here today, be sure to hit hashtag wizard in the chat, follow that link, and be sure to sign up for a year or a month or whatever you feel like you need. That's gonna do it for us today. We will be back at noon Pacific tomorrow. New episode of On Second Thought is up on the site. Be sure to check that out. We'll have a preview for you sometime this week. Andre, it's good to see you. Appreciate having you back in studio. You did a very good Landon today. Basically same, interchangeable.
That's
Landon. Exactly.
I got the Landon shorts on today.
Thanks for wearing shoes.
Can you guys not rub your thighs and shit?
No diddy. All right, let's get out of here. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
Peace.
Later, Scott. That was a good one, Burke.